Buffalo can hang on. This is going to be a good one.
The fans at Kansas Speedway know how to have a good time. And you are all invited. NASCAR weekend at Kansas Speedway, May 4th and 5th. Get your tickets now at kansasspeedway.com.
All my life, been grinding all my life. Sacrifice, hustle paid the price. Wanna slice, got to roll the dice. That's why all my life, I've been grinding all my life. Look, all my life, been grinding all my life.
Welcome to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, Twitter and Facebook Live. I am Sterling Holmes live in studio. Darren Smith at his home studio decided that it was not completely 75 and sunny. It's only about 64 and sunny, so he couldn't venture out. But Darren, how you doing?
Doing pretty good. I will be in studio tomorrow, Sterling. We are going to have a special young guest who I am so happy to utilize our platform to promote this young lady. And so I will wait until tomorrow to reveal it. But she is, let's just say, she's a young champion, and she's the first of her kind here in Kansas City.
Love it. Love it. See, even I don't know. So everyone out there, I get thrown curveballs too. And speaking of curveballs, we'll have on David Leske of Inside the Crown, second segment today, around 3:20 to talk some Royals baseball. Darren, you were at the game last night, the abysmal performance that the Kansas City Royals put on the field against the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. I don't even know if that's still their name. I'm always going to call them that because it's just what I remember them being as a kid, that long-winded name that always made me laugh. But you were at the game last night. What was your takeaways?
Oh, man. Due to FCC violations that could occur, I'm going to try to keep my comments as clean as possible. Like you said, it was abysmal. It was actually sort of embarrassing. It was if I were to have bet on a game, I think I'd have been real upset. One, because I think the most interesting thing for me is that Mike Matheny waits too long to pull a pitcher out, and you know he'll wait till they get the bases loaded and then give up runs before he decides to pull him. I'm like, man, why you let it get to this point? A lot of people say, well, maybe he could pitch himself out of a jam.
Well, dude, you're going to pull him out when he's pitching well?
I'm sorry. Well, you've already given up runs and you got the bases loaded. Yeah, I would pull him out. I mean, that's not pitching well if you're – you know, look, first they were trailing 3-0, and then they were trailing 4-0. Now, you know, they gave up a run, though they still have runners on base for the Angels. The Royals got a chance to dig, you know, try to claw back up as they scored three runs. I think it was in the bottom of the fifth or sixth inning. Can't remember which one. But then of course, the pitcher gave up an additional two more runs, and it was like, come on, man. Like, just stop it, man. I mean, you know, this is about to get out of hand in a second. And I ended up leaving the game before the game actually completed. I had to go pick my parents up from the airport, so I didn't get it. I don't know what the final score was. I was looking on the phone because they were already losing.
You don't want to look. It was one of those games where the bats weren't good, the pitching wasn't good, the defense wasn't good. There wasn't anything that you're like, all right, we have a takeaway.
I mean, how does a team score five runs and there are no batted hits? They're all off of errors, man. I was like, seriously, this was a bad display, at least for my first game to attend this year. It was a bad show of play on behalf of the Royals last night.
It's
beautiful field, though. I mean, it reminded me, you know, when I got there and I was, you know, grabbing my little dinner and sitting in my seat, I'm just, you know, I just generally from time to time, first ball game of the year, I will look out and just look at how beautiful our stadium is and you know, our ballpark is, and it truly is. It's one of the best I've seen in the country, and you know, I'm fortunate enough to live in Kansas City to see Kauffman Stadium. But then the Royals took the field, and we saw what happened.
I've probably been to about seven stadiums, and Kauffman is still my favorite. I get it. I'm a little biased. I'm from Kansas City. But Kauffman just has some beauty about it. It has something that just I feel like other stadiums or fields just don't have. You have the pretty views of the fountain. You have the grass, the large outfield. Something about Kauffman is just so aesthetically pleasing, it's hard to even put into words.
Well, and look, I will say another thing is because of the accessibility of it, you know, right off the highway, you know, when you get a chance, look, I don't know, I look at little crazy things like this. I like seeing how much traffic is flowing to and from, you know, going by the stadium because it kind of gives me an idea of how traffic is going to be when I'm ready to go. And so when I see that, and then, of course, you know, yeah, you do see, you know, you do see the Denny's, you do see, you know, the well, it used to be Adams Mark Hotel across the street. You see the gas station and the Missouri Welcome Center. So I mean, just, you know, that is stuff that I see, I guess, from my vantage point or from my seat in the press box, and you know. But then you also get a chance. And look, I'm not one who, as much as it would probably be pleasing, I don't like sitting down low to the field. I like sitting up high in the high risers in the nosebleed because I like to be able to see everything, you know, from a distance and see everything in eye view versus, you know, having to worry about looking at the jumbotron or something. And so just like you said, the field, the ballpark is aesthetically beautiful. You got obviously the little sections in the outfield area. You got the play area for the kids and stuff, yeah, like that. You got the small little diamond like that. So, you know, I tell people all the time, if you know, now they were telling me last night they were going to have like 6,000. I said, well, did they cut it down or something? They said, no, just the, you know, the announced attendance that they were, I guess, tickets. So, well, like I told you, you know, get you some $17 tickets, but perhaps, if you're trying to get more people, perhaps you might need to lower the ticket prices even more to get people to, you know, come back into the games. But,
well, that was my next question for you, Darren, was what was the crowd like? What was the stadium like? Again, first, it's a bad game, so it's not the best one to judge. You thought you'd get more people.
Well,
because
it's a bad game because the Royals played badly.
Well, exactly. But I mean, it's kind of a marquee matchup to an extent. I mean, the Angels have a lot of big-name players. I mean, I know Albert Pujols is an absolute shell of what he once was, a miserable contract, but it's still Albert Pujols. If you want to see him before his career's over, that's still, I guess, a little bit of a draw. You know, what was the crowd like?
The crowd size was decent. Like I said, about 6,000, 6 out of 10,000. The most interesting thing about the crowd was literally how quiet it was in between pitches. Like, you know, like the bases are loaded and it's like so quiet. I wanted to yell out, throw the damn ball, you know, just because, you know, because the pitcher was just like waiting. And I'm like, dude, what are you waiting on? Like, and so it truly was so quiet that you feel like I felt like I could have yelled from the press box and down to the field and the pitcher would have heard me. So it was interesting. Obviously, you know, when the Royals were scoring runs, yeah, you know, you got the crowd into it and stuff like that. And there were actually a lot of cheering for the California Angels as well. So that kind of surprised me, I guess you could say, but not as much so as how quiet it was just throughout the game. Like in between pitches, it felt like you could hear like the umpire. And it's funny. I think one of the biggest reactions was when one of the Royals fouled the ball off his bat and the umpire caught it, you know, right behind him. So I think they got one of the loudest reactions at the stadium last night.
Well, that's one of the biggest reactions for your home team. That's typically not a good sign. We'll talk more about it with David Leske of Inside the Crown when he joins us in the second segment. We do have Danny Duffy after his first masterful start going up against Dylan Bundy in tonight's game. Darren, I do want to talk to you before we talk more Royals baseball. Julian Edelman is hanging the cleats up. Looks like he failed a physical, which he was going to retire anyways, he says. You know, someone who's had PED suspensions in the past, maybe that came back to bite him and he said, screw it, I got caught, I'm out. But now the talk is he a Hall of Famer? My initial reaction is that's an absolute laughable joke of a Hall of Fame pick. There's no chance in my mind Julian Edelman sniffs, gets even close to the Hall of Fame. What do you think?
Well, first of all, I don't know who started this conversation. I don't know who pulled this joke on some legitimate media folk. But, you know, I guess we're going to have this conversation. No, he's not a Hall of Famer. Now, if you were talking, if there was a Hall of Fame for a postseason play, yes, you know, I'd say he's probably deserving of it. I know a lot of people talking about, I think his number is the second only to maybe Jerry Rice for postseason play or something like that. So if you were doing it off of postseason, yeah, I guess you could utilize that. But it's always a matter of who was doing the voting at the time and what's the story that's going to be told. I know a lot of people would have issue with it if he somehow got in before Torrey Holt or Isaac Bruce, I believe, or some of the other wide receivers that were much better, that played, you know, that played in the same era, but, you know, maybe have done more statistically. You know, Edelman will have the argument, obviously, as it relates to rings, because it's easy to get those rings when you're playing with Tom Brady and coached by Bill Belichick. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer. I'm in no position to vote yay or nay if I was, if his name would come up. I would say no. Now, in fairness, I will say, I did get a chance to ask Julian Edelman a couple of questions when he won the Super Bowl MVP a couple of years ago when the Super Bowl was, I believe, in Atlanta. And I got a chance in the post press conference, I got a chance to ask him a couple of questions. So, you know, I do like the man. I don't have a problem with him. But I think if you look at his body of work came more so in the postseason. But no, he's not. He's not a first ballot Hall of Fame or anything like that.
It's just a joke to me. I get the postseason stuff. Like, I get it, but that's like saying Robert Horry or Derek Fisher all of a sudden are Hall. Like, Robert Horry hit more big shots in the NBA than Julian Edelman had catches in the playoffs. Like, if we're being completely transparent, are you going to put the entire, like, offensive line of the Patriots into the Hall of Fame then now? Like, just because you win multiple championships doesn't mean that you are automatically a Hall of Famer. Tyreek Hill has 17 more touchdowns than Julian Edelman. Tyreek Hill's been in the NFL for 5 years. 17 more touchdowns than Julian Edelman. Brandon Cooks has more career receiving yards than Julian Edelman. Yeah, Brandon Cooks. Dwayne Bowe, more career receiving yards than Julian Edelman.
That's the name I didn't think I'd hear on the show.
but like when Dwayne Bowe and Brandon Cooks and Tyreek Hill, by the way, 17 more touchdowns for Tyreek Hill is just absurd. Like, he's been in the NFL 5 years. Julian Edelman's been in there. He's 34. Like, come on. At some point, we have to say, congratulations. You did great in the playoffs. You're a great player. Dude, you have less receiving yards than Dwayne Bowe and Brandon Cooks. Those guys aren't sniffing the Hall of Fame. Jeremy Maclin has more receiving yards and touchdowns than Julian Edelman. This is absurd. This conversation, just the people that say he should be in there, that's absurd. Is Jeremy Maclin all of a sudden now a Hall of Famer? Like, just because you played on a great team, just because you had Tom Brady as your quarterback, doesn't make you a Hall of Famer. It's absurd.
I've got really nothing for that. I don't have an argument. I don't have a comeback. I mean, I really don't. I can't really argue that, because everything you said is true. And like I said, you bringing up Dwayne Bowe and Jeremy Maclin just really threw me for a loop. So yeah, I've got no arguments with your points, with your case. I don't know whether or not he's truly retired, because he failed his physical. And I guess he announced his retirement. He does have a chance to get upwards of $2 million this year if he doesn't play or anything like that, because of, I don't know, something in the CBA or something that allows him to get upwards of $2 million fulfilling his physical and retiring or whatever. But if you listen to his former teammate, Rob Gronkowski, there's a 69%, and take 69 however you want to,
nice,
that he will not retire and perhaps end up in Tampa Bay. Now, Tampa Bay has already signed another player to stack. Now, see, people thought I was crazy, and you included, and I'll get to why in a second, but people thought I was crazy about, you know, having the Chiefs trade up and strengthen their strength and try to get that tight end out of Florida. But Tom Brady adds another offensive weapon with the running back, and the reason why they said, because I guess the running backs that they had, including Leonard Fournette and Roy Jones and what have you, were having problems catching the ball out of the backfield. Well, Giovanni Bernard kind of solves that problem. Plus, he was a three-down back, and you know, before they brought in, before Cincinnati brought in another running back. I saw that to say is, there was talk on Twitter yesterday, Sterling, and I know this will make you feel good, that there are NFL executives who are hearing that the Chiefs might be interested in signing one can't get right, also known as Antonio Brown. So when I saw that, the first person I thought about was you, because I'm like, I could have sworn I had this discussion on air, sitting on the couch with you, and you, you know, and you shot it down, and now NFL executives are out here talking that talk. So,
let me get to all.
What do you think?
Let me get to all three of those. One, drafting up to get Kyle Pitts is absurd. That would be one of the worst moves I could possibly imagine. That would just be absurd, wasting draft picks to trade up for basically a tight end number two for at least three or four seasons. Number two, Giovanni Bernard had rumors of actually going to Kansas City. This is a good pickup for Tampa Bay. Very good third down back. Very good receiving back. He thrives in that role. That makes sense there. I wouldn't have been opposed to him coming to Kansas City and taking that role over as far as let Clyde go first and second, and then you have Giovanni Bernard as your third down back. No problem there, but you know, at some point, you drafted Clyde first round, got to let him, give him the reins, give him the keys to the Ferrari, let him be your third down back. That's why you draft a run. If you're going to draft a running back in the first round, make sure he's your bell cow. Make sure he's your every down back. This maybe gives him a better chance to grab hold of this position here. And then number three, Antonio Brown, please do not get him nowhere near this team. I don't want the headache. I don't want the possibility of a disaster. I don't want it. I don't want it. I get it. All the veteran wide receivers are off the market now. I don't want Antonio Brown. I just don't want the potential for disaster. He was good for one season. Tom Brady somehow is a whisperer to Antonio Brown, but Tom Brady's not here. I don't want a potential disaster.
Oh, man. That was so good, Sterling. See, I queued it up and you knocked them all down. Except for the fact, of course, if you're Antonio Brown, look, you don't have too many options right now. Nobody is looking to pay you the type of money that you want, including the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Look, I think they've offered him $2 million, I believe it was. If I'm correct, if I'm incorrect, tell me about that, Sterling. But I do believe that they are looking to get him back for about $2 million, and he has yet to sign that contract now. Perhaps Kansas City offers them $2 million and $1 or whatever. Again, I'm of the adage that you allow Patrick, because look, you see what Tom Brady's doing now, and nobody seems to have a problem with him getting all these offensive weapons and stuff like that. Imagine now, you're only gonna have so many players that can be on the field. You can't put Roe Jones, you can't put Leonard Fournette, you can't put Giovanni Bernard, you can't put Chris Evans, you can't put Mike Evans, you can't put Chris Chris Godwin on the, and you can't put Antonio Brown, you can't put Rob Gronkowski, you can't have all these players on the field at the same time. However, because you have so much depth, you can interchange them, and that just throws the defense off so very much. Now, granted, we have Kelce, we have Tyreek. We just need more than that. And I'm saying with them, they have an opportunity to actually be able to do, you know, they have an opportunity with that, with, you know, with the players that they have and that they keep seeming to acquire down there. And all Tom Brady is, and Tampa Bay are doing, they're strengthening their strength.
But a lot of those guys, like Gronkowski's over the hill. We know this. He showed up in the Super Bowl. That was great. They schemed for him, and he did his job. Gronkowski's over the hill. He's not what he once was. Guys like
Gronkowski scored in the Super Bowl, man. But
Leonard Fournette, like, no one's out here saying Leonard Fournette's a top. There's a reason why he was cut and then picked up for nothing. There's a reason he's not even the starter in Tampa Bay. Fournette is just a guy at this point. He's just a guy. I mean, and Giovanni Bernard.
Sterling, I get the whole Jag type thing, but you forget these players contributed mightily to Tampa Bay,
sure,
beating Kansas City, and winning a Super Bowl. So Sterling, that counts for something. You can't just dismiss these players because they don't fit the Sterling Holmes model.
Looking. Austin Ryder won a Super Bowl as a starting center for the Chiefs. Austin Ryder is a Jag. He's just a guy. I mean, you can win if you have all the pieces around them, but not everyone is going to be a stud. Not every guy on a Super Bowl winning team is a superstar. We know this.
Did the Chiefs have the winning pieces around them to beat Tampa Bay this past
two
February?
Years ago? They did. Obviously not this year. This year again. This year, I don't want to overreact, but
they were down one starting tackle.
They were down
from the November game.
They were down from the November Schwartz, game. Fisher. They well, were well, hold they were on, down. Hold LD. On, they were down. Their whole Swisher offensive line was decimated.
Swisher
Come
didn't. Swisher didn't play in November when they went down there. Eric Fisher was there, but Schwartz wasn't. Got me saying Swisher thinking about Swisher sweeps. Schwartz didn't play in November when they went down there. The only starter that wasn't there was Fisher. Now, him being that now, you know,
that
so
was huge.
We can't. Okay, so one player made the difference between
it's
the Chiefs
winning
and losing.
It's more than one player. Mike Rimmers, who had to get thrust into the right guard and right tackle role during the season, all of a sudden is now your starting left tackle in the Super Bowl after not playing left tackle all season, who was signed as a backup.
So Travis Kelce, Tyreek Hill.
They had no time. Shaq Barrett had 10 pressures.
Sterling, I know we got to go to break.
We do got to go to break.
Travis Kelce on third down. It had nothing to do with Shaq Barrett pressuring him. He dropped the ball.
Yes.
Tyreek Hill and the other running back, his name just eludes me right now for some reason.
Darrell Williams dropped
touchdown passes in the end zone with the ball hitting them in the hands and the face mask. So that had nothing to do with Shaq Barrett and all them. Patrick Mahomes got the ball off to them. So I'm saying those plays right there had nothing to do with the line, had nothing to do with Shaq Barrett pressure, had nothing to do with those players did not. So Kansas City had the team to. No. What you're saying is that yeah, 2 years ago Kansas City had the players to win. Kansas City had those same players in November when they went down there and beat Tampa Bay. The only player that they did not have from that day in November to February was Eric Fisher.
They had
now
a
Eric
bad
Fisher.
Game.
Eric. Okay. Now that I can agree with, but you can't say that they didn't have the talent to beat Tampa Bay this time around.
They had the talent. We're not disagreeing with that. I think the Chiefs were the better team. I think the Chiefs were more talented.
You just sat here and told me. You just sat here and said
we got to take a break. No, I've told you. I said the whole time. That's what I said.
Hold on. We will circle back around this another time. Let's go to break. Come back, and when we do, we'll be joined by David Lesky right here on Darren and Sterling on ESPN Kansas City.
Welcome back to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com, Twitter and Facebook Live. We're joined now, after a slight delay, because Darren and I were getting into a heated debate, we're joined now by David Lesky of Inside the Crown. David, it's good having you back on.
Yeah, it's been way too long. I feel like we just keep running into scheduling issues.
Yeah, it's all these issues because you are just fancy now, and you go to all these games, and you're sitting there, and you get to watch the Royals get blown out. I know.
Yeah, look, it's a glamorous life, and it's not one that I'm going to apologize for, okay?
Okay. You know what? We have a lot to get into here.
Hold on, were you at the game last night, David?
I was there. It was cold.
Oh, I apologize. I was there in the press box and I didn't come over to you, so I apologize. I was there focused on, well, one, I didn't know who was going to be there, and two, I was trying to find my seat and then I was trying to get something to eat and saw they just had the, you know, regular cheeseburgers and chicken and stuff. So I was like, okay, let me get that.
And it was such a good game.
I ain't gonna lie.
So, you know.
Cool part was Shohei Ohtani hitting a 119 exit velo. But David, we got a lot to get into.
No.
What, Darren? What you going to talk about now?
The one bright spot for the Royals last night was Salvi hitting his 1,000th career hit.
Yeah.
True. I'll give you that one. With the season underway, we have a very small sample size, but what has been your initial takeaways?
I mean, it's hard to glean much of anything. Well, 8 games in general is nothing. You know, it's 1/20th of the season. So that puts some issues with trying to figure out what's going on. Two, they haven't played. I mean, tonight will be the first time they get a third. They play 3 games in a row but without an off day. So that's getting to some normalcy in baseball. But look, it's a rhythm sport. And when you can't, you're on 1 day off, 2 on 2 days off, 1. It's just you can't get going. And so it's hard to know a lot of what to make of this team. I think we can say fairly confidently that the bullpen is deep and solid. I'm not sure if it's just great or good, but the bullpen is a strength. At least they have enough good arms out there that they'll keep the Royals in games late. I mean, last night they struggled a little bit, but a game is never going to be a win. So it's one of those.
Didn't matter.
It's not a huge deal. But you know, the offense, who knows? They looked great in the spring, which they've done in the past, and then they looked great to come out of the gates on opening day and the Saturday after, but then haven't scored much since. They scored 25 runs the first two games and 15 in the next six. So they're averaging 5 a game, which is good. How they've gotten there, not so good. and the starting pitching, you know, they've had some okay starts. Minor on Sunday, he was fine, but didn't give enough length. He was worked out of so much trouble. Singer last night, I thought, was pretty okay. I mean, I wrote today that he probably threw too many strikes, honestly, too many bad strikes, I guess, is a better way to put that. But ultimately, his stuff was really sharp last night. We've seen a good start from Duffy, good start from Junis. Keller's been the problem at this point, and so we'll see what he does tomorrow. But there's just it's hard to really know. And 8 games is tough enough, but when you've got 8 games spread out over 12 days, I think is what it is. That's a tough ask to figure anything out about a baseball team. It's just nothing's been normal so far. And hopefully it looks like the weather's going to hold for the most part of this homestand. And they're going to play some games in a row. They're going to get back to normal. And maybe we'll see. Well, we'll have some answers, I feel like, in about a week. We'll know a lot more than we do today.
Well, David, it's a tough ask, but that's why we have you on here. With Brad Keller, like you said, he's been absolutely shelled in his first two starts. The past couple seasons, he's obviously overperformed his FIP, his fielding independent pitching. A lot of things have been – he's been better than the numbers. The numbers have been better than what he is supposed to be, as an example. Is this him coming back to earth, or is this just a blip on the radar and you think he's going to figure it out?
Well, I don't think it's him coming back to earth necessarily, because this is beyond that. Thinking about Keller, that he doesn't get strikeouts, and that's what the analytics look at and don't like about him. But he's always limited contact, and more importantly, hard contact. He just doesn't tend to get hit around. And in these first two starts, he's been hit around. I mean, that home run he gave up to Yermin Mercedes was just an absolute bomb in Chicago, and you don't see that. I mean, last year, the guy gave up 2 doubles and 2 homers all season long. Now, it was 9 starts, so it's not a full season, but 4 extra base hits and 9 starts is an impressive run, whether it's a whole season or a third of a season. So he gave up 2 doubles for the first 2 batters this year. It's just one of those things. He's had a rough go of it. I'm still not convinced he's healthy, honestly. There's just guys just don't get hit around like that when they've never been hit around like that before, and guys don't stop using their slider when they've increased slider usage every year of their career previously. Something doesn't make sense there, and they say he's healthy, so I don't know. But I feel like if he is healthy, there's got to be a good start in there. I mean, this is a guy who, like I said, he's limited hard contact throughout his career. It's not a long career, but 3 years is not nothing. He's generally been solid. I mean, last year the numbers ended up being were great numbers. But he's a guy you can probably count on in the middle of a rotation, you think. And he's hanging pitches. His command is all over the place. Just everything seems out of whack with him right now. I said after his first start, I want to see his second start. And I said after his second start, I want to see his third start. At some point, you got to do something. And I don't know. I feel like there's an injury there. I really do. And they keep saying there's not. So maybe I'm wrong. I'm not a doctor. I don't even pretend to be one. But it's been a bad bad go for him. And if the Royals want to go anywhere, they need him to figure it out. He's very important.
At some point, you're going to say you don't want to see his fifth or sixth start is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean, I want to know before then.
Yeah.
If he goes out tomorrow and gets lit up, and this is a good Angels offense.
Yeah.
You know, tomorrow gets lit up again, you have to at least say, okay, maybe he says he's healthy, but we got to look at this because the guy has never been hit like this before. He's had bad starts, but never like his first start. And, you know, the start in Chicago on Thursday, I think it was, he looked a little better after that first inning. But even then, like I said, the command was just everywhere. And he's fought that before, but I don't know, just not like that. And so they're going to have to, if things don't go well tomorrow, they're going to have to take a look at him and see what's going on.
There'll need to be a phantom injury, a phantom baseball injury like watermelon elbow or salad tong elbow. These are real ones, by the way, I'm name dropping. Those actually were injuries that got guys on the IL. David, you touched on your website, Inside the Crown. Again, everyone go to Inside the Crown. It's phenomenal. If you want to read David Lesky's work, go there. You talked about Brady Singer. You talked about how he was throwing too many bad strikes. There are such things as bad strikes. Break this down for us.
Yeah, I mean, basically, when Singer was successful last season, and I didn't get into this as much in the article because it was kind of getting long at this point, but he was really dominating the top third of the zone. His fastball, which has so much natural movement, and last night he was hitting 97 in the first couple innings, which was I don't think I remember that last year from him. He's got so much movement and good velocity. He can get a ton of swings and misses at the top of the zone. He never went there. And it's okay, I guess, if you don't, but he also didn't live enough on the edges of the zone. There's a whole idea that's kind of sprouting in baseball when you look at the strike zone chart and you think of it with a white background. You want to see a lot of white in there because you don't want to fill up that strike zone. It seems counterintuitive. But good hitters can hit strikes. You need to put pitches on the edges, make them make weak contact, swing and miss, all that good stuff. And last night when Brady Singer gave up hits, the pitches were in the happy zone. They were down the middle. They were in the lower third. But honestly, keeping the ball down doesn't really mean anything to hitters. Keeping the ball down allows them to get leverage to lift the ball. And when you're in the middle of the plate, you're going to get hit hard. And the Royals defense let him down, and he was part of that, actually, too. He made a throwing error in that second inning. But I'm not trying to blame Singer for the defense, but he put the defense in that position by having hittable pitches that let the Angels get on base. I mean, that's the defense wouldn't have had these issues if there weren't runners on all around him. And so I think that's something he needs to work with. I think he needs to get the ball up more. But more importantly, he needs to not live in the middle of the plate because his stuff is good, but big league hitters can hit good stuff if it's in a spot they can hit. You need to make it so that they don't have that easy access, basically. And he didn't last night, and he paid for it.
David Lesky, you can find him on Twitter at DB Lesky, writer for Inside the Crown Royals Review and Baseball Perspective. Sterling had asked me about my thoughts of being at the game last night and when the crowd reaction. So, I don't know, maybe it was me. I don't know what you thought about it, but did it not seem that in between pitches, even though we had about 6,000 fans there, how quiet the atmosphere was? And I was telling Sterling, it felt so quiet that I wanted to yell out from the press box, like, throw the damn ball, hurry up and strike somebody out, especially, you know, with the runners on base or what have you. One, what do you think about that? But then also, you mentioned earlier, and I think you were on the Zoom yesterday when I think Lebo had asked Mike Matheny about the fact that they finally got a 10-game homestand and kind of go back into a little bit of normalcy, as you mentioned. How important that is, do you think, for Mike Matheny and his ball club to be able to kind of go back to normal with this particular homestand that they're on?
Yeah, I mean, with the crowd, the Royals didn't give the crowd a reason to cheer. It was
definitely one inning where they got the three runs.
Right, yeah. Early in the game, it was Salvador Perez's two hits, and that was it. And I thought it was really funny. Benintendi hit just a monster foul ball. And that was probably the most excited the crowd had gotten to that point. It was a foul ball. But what was really interesting to me the crowd got into it from that point. It was like, oh, wait, they can actually hit the ball. So, okay, yeah, yeah. And it was only 4-0. And they ended up scoring three and got back in the game before they let the Angels get three back and just gave it all away. But there's just nothing to cheer about. And the thing about a team when they're not hitting, well, we've seen this a lot over the last few seasons, and even in the championship years, the Royals, every team goes through just rough stretches of offense. When a team isn't hitting, they look lethargic. And when a team looks lethargic, the fans get lethargic. it's a tumbleweed rolling down the hill, just gathering everything. And it's difficult. It's tough. It's tough to get into a game. And look, when you're maxing out at 9,800 or something like that, and you don't even get that, small crowd, you're not going to get a ton of noise. But I mean, the Royals need to do something to get the fans in the game. And hopefully they can break out of their little slump tonight. But and as for the normalcy of a 10-game homestand, like I said, they've played two games in a row now three times, and that's the longest stretch of games they've played without a day off at this point, in a game where you're basically trained to get into rhythms and play 12, 16, 21 days in a row sometimes. They haven't had a chance to really get into that rhythm at any point. And so to get to do it at home for 10 games, that's really helpful. And they have an off day on next Thursday, I want to say, after their homestand before they head to Minnesota. Before they head to Detroit. That's a normal off day. That's the sort of off day that you go, okay, we can use this because we played 11 days in a row. Not, oh, well, we played one day and then we need to get another day off. Great. I think that'll be really big for them. And like I said earlier, it's hard to evaluate when they haven't been given a chance to play the game the way they're trained to play the game. So I think this will be good both for the team, obviously, to get on track, but also for us to look at this team and have an idea of what they are when they're playing in a normal setting. The weather's not going to be real conducive to hitting a lot because it looks like it's going to be chilly the whole homestand. But, it'll just be nice to play a few days in a row and not be on again, off again constantly.
Well, David, yours and my are breakout guys from going into the season, not starting off so hot. I had Andrew Benintendi. He has struggled, to say the least. And I believe you had Hunter Dozier. And Hunter Dozier's has been bitten by the injury bug. He's back in the lineup tonight. Can you give us, or at least just touch on, these two guys? Do you think that either of them are going to turn it around? Is Hunter Dozier's basically just based on his health? I mean, after just signing that contract, we knew health was an issue, and he's starting this contract off with a injury. That's not the best sign for things to come.
Yeah, he was raking in spring training. And I know it's spring training, but his swing looked really, really good. It wasn't just, oh, he's hitting bad pitchers in Arizona air. He looked really good. And then he comes to opening day, and the thumb, I don't remember exactly what happened, but his thumb starts swelling up. And I think they've handled it really poorly, honestly. They should have put him on the injured list. I mean, there's no reason, especially that's one advantage of all the off days, because you can put him on a 10-day injured list, let everything heal up, and he only misses six or seven games. You will never have another opportunity in the season outside of the All-Star break to put somebody on the 10-day injured list and only lose six or seven games from them. It's just that's the advantage. That's the only advantage of the early season off days. And so I don't know why they didn't do that. I think he tried to play through it, and he's 0 for 13, I think, to start. So that's a problem for him. He's got a hole to dig out of now. I don't even know why he's in the lineup tonight, honestly. I think you get the guy right. It's a long season. I think a lot of fans are, NFL fans, one, there's 16 games, and so every game is so important, but also coming off a season where actually every baseball game was important with 60 games. It was a different feeling last year. I think a lot of people have forgotten just how long 162 games is, that, if you need to get 10 or 12 games to get right, do it now, because it's a long season to go. So, I don't know. I'm a little bit worried about him because I'm not entirely sure he's healthy. Benintendi worries me in a different way. His bat looks slow to me. It looks like he's not getting around on good fastballs. He's pulled a couple more pitches since I looked at it the other day, but in general, he's not doing a great job of pulling the ball. Everything's going to the opposite field, which it's interesting to me because teams are still playing him shifted way around to the right, and so maybe he can benefit and get a few hits from that in the interim. But if he doesn't start to be able to get around on fastballs, we're going to be missing Franchy Cordero, which is a weird position to be in because Franchy Cordero is he's the definition of just okay. I mean, potential, but not anything special. And it worries me. It worries me quite a bit. Now, I will say, in a weird way, that foul ball last night was really encouraging because that was the first time I've seen him turn on a pitch, like really turn on a pitch. And he doesn't need to do it every at bat or anything, but to have the ability to, that's encouraging. I wrote before the season I thought Benintendi would get off to a slow start, so I'm not terribly surprised. I'm just a little surprised at how slow his bat looks. But you know, he's a perfect example of a guy. I want to see him get a rhythm. I want to see him go and get to play 10 days in a row instead of two on one off, because I think he could use that and he could benefit from that, because we saw him start off spring a little bit slow too.
Yeah.
And then when they started playing the regulars more often rather than every other day, he kind of warmed up a little bit. So I'm willing to give him a chance to see. I'm worried about Dozier from the injury standpoint. I'm willing to say wait and see on Benintendi, but that swing being really slow, that concerns me quite a bit.
Again, joined right here by David Leske of Inside the Crown. So, David, staying on Benintendi, I don't want to be a cynical asshole. I really don't, man. But did the Red Sox maybe know something that we didn't? Because when the Royals got Benintendi, my initial thought was, that's it? Like, this seems like we're buying insanely low. I know about the injuries. I know 2020 wasn't the best season, but, you know, that just seems so low for a former top prospect. Do you think they may have known something, or is this just, again, he's trying to revert back, not trying to pull the ball as much, not trying to hit as many home runs and go back to his old swing?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that they were obviously ready to move on, and so much so that they threw in a decent amount of his 2021 contract. The Royals only paying like $2.7 million of 6.6 or something like that. I mean, I'm probably slightly off on those numbers, but the Red Sox are paying more than the Royals for Benintendi this year. So they wanted to get rid of him. So I don't think they were hiding that fact at all. I just think the Royals were a little more willing to see if they could tap into what he was in 2018 and the first 5 months of 2019 before he got hurt. I don't want to say somebody's damaged goods eight sure. games in. But, I mean, yeah, they were clearly ready to move on. and there was a reason for that. I don't know if they were just tired of waiting, if they thought, well, we can trade him now and get something, or another bad year ends up cratering his value entirely. Maybe they just said it's not worth the risk. I don't know. But... yeah, I mean, it's worth remembering that they were ready to get rid of him and they threw in a bunch of money. I think that's a fair thing to keep in mind with Benintendi. I want to see the next 10 days before I go into full panic mode. I'm worried, not panicked yet, but it could get there. It could get there pretty quick.
Before I let you go, speaking of the next 10 days, you brought this up on Twitter. They have three lefties coming up when they play Toronto, and you're interested to see how that shakes out. Will they let Kyle Isabel face the lefties? Are they going to do a McBroom-Soler combo with Soler playing right field, as we saw him play right field once already this season? Do they call up Edward Olivares? Which way do you think they'll go, and which way would you like to see the Kansas City Royals go?
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know how they're going to go, because in some ways they want to get Isabel playing time. And that, he's up right now. I think he played really well in spring training, but I think if there was a minor league season happening right now and not waiting until May, I think he would have been on one of those rosters. They wanted him to play games. He played well enough to get on the big league roster, so here he is. But he struck out in half his bats. And that's not good. His defense has been fine, but and when he's made contact, he's made solid contact. It's just contact has been tough to come by. He's got 29 plate appearances, and 22 of them have gotten to two strikes. That's not good. So I don't know. I could see them saying, okay, we're going to send you down to the alternate site. Then you're going to go to Omaha. You'll be back in – we plan for you to be back in June, July, whatever.
Yeah.
I could see them doing that, bringing up Oliveras, and I feel like that's more likely now after putting Jerod Dyson in the lineup today, just because why? I mean, Dyson isn't a very good fit on this team because anytime he plays for Benintendi or Isbell, you're going to say why, because it's a lefty replacing a lefty.
Yes.
So maybe it really is just as simple as they want to get Dyson in the game because he hasn't started yet, and it's, what, 12 days after the season opener? He's had two at bats. He's come to the plate twice in 12 days. So, yeah, maybe you want to get him some action because you want to keep your bench guys fresh. Maybe that's all it is. But with three lefties coming up, I don't know. I could see them sending Isbell out and bringing Oliveras up. I could see them saying, hey, you're gonna sit on the bench. It's not like you're going to play at the alternate site either. You know, they don't exactly have games to play down there. I mean, I guess they are playing a couple games against some other alternate sites. So maybe I'm off there. But I could see them saying, you're going to sit on the bench, doing some combination in right field of Soler, maybe McBroom in right, Merrifield with Alberto at second base. I don't know. I could see that too. There are possibilities. I think that's probably what ends up happening. But I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up being somebody like Oliveras up with Isbell getting demoted and with the plan to see him again in a few weeks.
Okay, I lied. Actual final question. When it comes to review in baseball, I was so frustrated. This was not what the rule was meant for, with Whit Merrifield being called out first. I didn't think they had enough to even overturn it. And then they call him out because he may have gone off the bag by a split second. The original replay rule was brought in for overturning home run calls and not doing a Jim Joyce at first base to blow perfect games. And now you're seeing this also just decimate the stolen base, which is already on the downslope. And then you have, obviously, the Braves-Phillies game where you have it in front of you. He obviously never touches home plate, and yet they call him safe. Where is your stance when it comes to replay in baseball?
I think it's garbage. I want them to get the call right. If they can figure out a way that replay works, I'm all for it. But the problem is, it sucks. Because you've got these issues with guys. The Whit Merrifield situation is the one that I was especially heated about. And this is before the Braves situation on Sunday night. But the intention of the rule is not if he came off the base a 83rd of an inch. No. That's not what it's about.
Yeah.
I think there are ways to change the rule. One of them is that's stupid. You the base, look at the base as it's infinitely vertical. And so if you're above it, if you've touched the base and you're above it, you're still on the base as far as the rule is concerned. I think that would make a lot of sense there. The problem too, they get it wrong a lot of the time. It's not even like that. The call in the Braves Phillies game, the issue is that one of the biggest issues to me is it's based on the call on the field. No, don't base it on the call on the field. I don't care if they know what the call on the field was. Sometimes you can't avoid it. I mean, if a replay official is looking at that one from Sunday night, they're going to see the umpire calling it safe. So
you see the arms.
You can't avoid that, right. But it shouldn't be, it has to be enough to overturn the call. No, it should be totally independent of the call. Do you think he was safe or out? Because you've got this angle that you can zoom in, and the guy can't see it live. It's a hard call to make. The reason you have replay is because those are hard calls to make and you want to get it right. So why is it based on the call on the field? That's just stupid to me.
Yeah.
Just get the call right. But if they're not going to do that, just scrap the system because it's a waste of everybody's time. Replays take too long. They're too often wrong. And the way it's gone about is incorrect, I think. And so either do it right or get rid of it, but don't do it the way it is right now because it's just a bad system.
Yeah, I'm 100% with you. David, we could talk literally about the replay for 45 minutes at least itself because I get so heated. I turn bright red, like tomatoes aren't even as red as
my
face.
Oh, me too.
Yeah, so I'm glad we're on the same page here. But David Leske, follow him on Twitter, DB Leske, writer, Inside the Crown. Check it out. Go to the website, subscribe, Inside the Crown. Phenomenal stuff. Royals Review, Baseball Perspectives. David, any final thoughts? Anything you got coming up before you're out of here?
I have no idea what's coming up because the great thing that I'm doing on Inside the Crown that I'm loving is it's kind of at least after games is it's based on the game. So I don't know. I don't know what I'm going to write about for tomorrow, which is really fun for me because you kind of get to it's an opportunity for me to react and dive into things maybe a little bit differently than you'll see elsewhere. And so I don't know what's coming up. Hopefully, I get to talk about just an offensive explosion, maybe a no-hitter by Danny Duffy.
Yeah. And Benintendi, three home runs. There we go.
Yeah, hopefully it's something like that, but I don't really know. And I'm really having a good time with that, actually.
Well, we love to hear. I love reading your stuff. David, thank you so much.
Yep, thanks, guys.
All right, we'll take a quick break. This is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. Welcome back to Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City, 1510 AM, 94.5 FM, 1510.com. Thank you again to David Leskey, Inside the Crown, joining us today. Finally got a chance to get him back on the show. Our schedules be damned. Finally coming back on and joining to talk some Royals baseball. Thank you guys so much for listening to the show today. We'll be back live in studio tomorrow. Darren Smith will be bringing on a special guest. I'm even surprised. I don't even know, so it's going to be a surprise to me as it is to you guys. So make sure you guys tune in tomorrow from 3 to 4 p.m. right here on 1510 AM, 94.5 FM. Again, this is Darren and Sterling right here on ESPN Kansas City. We are out.
The Kansas City Mavericks are back on the ice and